evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, July 1st. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, high-speed pursuit ends in arrest of notorious felon. Suspect arrested in brutal murder of elderly woman in Mendocino. And at Fort Seward Community Meeting, local residents oppose Great Redwood Trail. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. High speeds and nighttime conditions contributed to a fatal motorcycle crash in Redway that occurred on Saturday evening, according to the California Highway Patrol. A spokesperson from the Garberville area CHP shared more details on this tragic accident for our listeners.
Hello, my name is Officer Lozinski with the California Highway Patrol. On June 29, 2024, at approximately 10:35 p.m., Humboldt Communications Center received a 911 call of a crash involving a motorcycle on Redwood Drive, north of the community of Redway. Redway Volunteer Fire Department, City Ambulance, and CHP arrived on scene and provided life-saving measures to the rider. The rider, Raul Villalopos, a 34-year-old Eureka resident, was transported to Gerald Phelps Medical Center in Garberville, where he was pronounced deceased.
Although the CHP Garberville area office is still investigating the cause of the crash, Officer Lozinski stated,
Villalobos was riding his motorcycle northbound on Redwood Drive at a high rate of speed. He laid the motorcycle down, it left the roadway, and struck the embankment. The CHP Garberville area office is investigating the cause of the crash. The CHP wants to remind motorists the importance of wearing appropriate safety equipment while riding motorcycles, including Department of Transportation approved helmets.
It was noted that Villalobos was not wearing a helmet at the time of the crash. KMA News extends our condolences to his friends and family. The Fortuna Police Department released additional details regarding the arrest of a wanted suspect who initially fled law enforcement on June 18th. The incident began when officers located a stolen vehicle in the 1600 block of Meadowlark Court in Fortuna. As the investigation unfolded, the scene was determined to be a chop shop, with multiple stolen vehicles stored at the location. Three stolen vehicles were recovered from the residence and garage. The suspect, identified as 50-year-old Daniel Ray Fiddler of Fortuna, fled into the Jameson Creek area and the densely wooded area behind the residence. A canine officer was deployed, however, Fiddler escaped before its arrival. Mutual aid was requested, and Fortuna police coordinated efforts to establish a perimeter around the wooded area. Officers were on high alert as Fiddler reportedly made comments about suicide by cop. However, officers were unable to locate Fiddler. It is believed that he arranged for an associate to pick him up and fled the area. As a result of the investigation, Daniel Ray Fiddler has been wanted for multiple crimes, including operating a chop shop and being in possession of stolen vehicles, firearms, and ammunition, which is prohibited as Fiddler is on active felony probation and has an active felony arrest warrant for kidnapping. While processing the scene, Rio Del Police became involved in a high-speed pursuit with a vehicle associated with the incident. The stolen silver Jeep led officers on a chase, ending in the rural area of Ferndale. The vehicle was found unoccupied, but is believed to be connected to this case. Fortuna Police issued a BOLO for Fiddler, who is considered a career criminal, known to be armed and dangerous. And after nearly 2 weeks on the run, Fortuna Police successfully made an arrest yesterday following a high-speed chase on Highway 36. Fortuna Police Chief Casey Day shares more details on this case.
Yesterday, Sunday, June 30th, 2024, at about 4:30 in the afternoon, Fortuna police officers successfully apprehended Daniel Fiddler. He was a suspect that had been wanted for numerous felonies, and after a high-speed chase that actually began near the city limits of Fortuna, it concluded off of Highway 36 near Carlotta, California. So the pursuit initiated on Runnerville Road after a Fortuna police officer observed Fiddler driving his red BMW. Despite officers' attempts to conduct an enforcement stop, Fiddler accelerated, prompting the high-speed chase. He evaded police with willful and wanton disregard for the safety of people and property, and the pursuit went through Fortuna, through Hydesville, and ultimately ended near the River Bar in Carlotta. During the chase, Fiddler's vehicle reached speeds on the highway exceeding 90 miles per hour. Fortuna PD officers deployed a spike strip, which successfully disabled one of the tires on the BMW that was being driven by Mr. Fiddler. The tire was damaged. It eventually disabled the BMW. He drove his vehicle into the river and fled on foot. Fiddler was apprehended quickly and without further incident, and the officers on scene reported a safe and successful conclusion to the pursuit.
Fiddler was booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility on 9 felony charges.
Vehicle theft-related crimes, weapon-related crimes, and felony reckless evading. He was additionally booked on a felony warrant for kidnapping and on an outstanding want for another pursuit of reckless evading, which was out of the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office.
Notably, Fiddler first made headlines in Humboldt County in 2013 for charges related to weapons, drugs, stolen vehicles, and attempted break-ins in Fortuna and Lolita. In 2015, Fiddler was sent to San Quentin, but was later relocated to the Siskiyou County Conservation Camp, where he ultimately escaped in a stolen vehicle.
This is a person who has been in and out of jail and prison and incarcerated for most of his adult life, and, you know, definitely a situation that does not call for rehabilitation. This is a person that needs to be held accountable to the extent of the law, and I hope that he is prosecuted to the extent of the law and put in, you know, state prison where he belongs. And so, in closing, I'm thrilled that, this incident came to a safe and efficient conclusion. Very proud of the officers for their professionalism and dedication to safely apprehending a dangerous suspect. Also, very thankful to the community for their support and vigilance in this matter.
You can see a photo of Fiddler and scenes from yesterday's arrest on the KMUD News Facebook page. At a community meeting on June 23rd in Fort Seward, offered an opportunity for tribal members, ranchers, and local residents to speak with officials from the Great Redwood Trail Agency and weigh in on the proposed trail. KMUD's Sam Anderson reports.
At a community meeting in Fort Seward on June 23rd, local tribal members came together with landowners and representatives from the Great Redwood Trail Agency, or GRTA, to discuss the proposed thru-hiker trail that will connect Sonoma County with northern Humboldt.
The great part about where we are is that we are in a dreaming and brainstorming phase where we have the ability to work together to create something that honors all of your history and moves us forward in a way that is healing and empowering.
This is Elaine Hogan, Executive Director of the Great Redwood Trail Agency, which earlier this spring released a 500-page draft master plan outlining the project. She said her agency is committed to listening to Native peoples and their concerns.
When we move forward in partnership, the important part is that we're together and that we're not moving forward, doing anything that you all aren't involved in.
If completed, the trail would stretch over 300 miles, traversing cities, towns, forests, and rivers. Much of the trail would cross the ancestral lands of local tribes, including the Wailaki people. Perry Lincoln, Wailaki descendant and director of local nonprofit Native Health in Native Hands, reminded attendees of the history of Fort Seward, the land upon which they were now meeting.
I'd like to acknowledge this place. It's called Quintet Jet Dung. which means valley. Today they call it Fort Seward, which is really not a good word for us. My people were from right here. My grandmother was taken from Dobbins Creek right there as a slave and never able to come back. So now I'm back. Now we're back. My grandfather, his name was Lassick. The newspaper said he was the most hated Native leader because he was resisting and he was trying to save his people, and they finally killed him right here in Fort Seward. So in a sense, my heart is bleeding to stand right here where my ancestors were killed for no reason. And we need to come out of that death and destruction and show a better way. Native people need to have a voice, and the Great Redwood Trail is just not a good idea.
Lincoln expressed concerns that the trail runs through culturally sensitive areas, including villages, burial grounds, and ceremonial sites, many of which are on private land that the Native community has been unable to access for more than 100 years. Bill Rich, an archaeologist specializing in cultural resources, said that when assessing important archaeological sites, it can be difficult to draw simple boundaries on a map.
Yes, there's archaeological sites. There's dozens and dozens of those kinds of circles on the landscape. There's cemetery areas, there's graves, there's villages. And we can certainly identify all those, but I'm wondering if there's more to that story. There's a bigger circle that includes those places, but will also include plant populations, will also include important salmon places, will also include all the biology, all the plants, the rocks. Yurok tribe took this perspective on the Klamath River, and they said there's a Klamath riverscape. And they drew a boundary around the Klamath River watershed, and they said, there's your cultural resource for Sequa. It's the Klamath River watershed and everything about it. I'm kind of thinking that we are probably up against something like that here.
Hogan said her agency has been engaging with tribal members throughout the planning process, but many tribal members say they do not feel as if they have been meaningfully consulted. Here's Michelle Merrifield, a Round Valley tribal member who is part of a community called the Kinistet Coalition, which opposes the trail. She joined the meeting via Zoom.
We've written some letters, you know, towards the Great Redwood Trail. We didn't get any answers back. We didn't get acknowledged that we wrote letters. We went to some of these meetings that the GRTA had in Ukiah and Eureka. We were given 3 minutes to voice our opinion and comments on the trail. And to me, that's not a sufficient consultation. There was a lot more questions going on about this trail. Nobody was getting answers to that. We have a choice now. We didn't have a choice back in 1910, 1915 when that railroad went through. So what I'm saying now is that we have a choice, all of us, to make the right decision for this trail. And I've always said no.
Merrifield says she's been organizing with local ranchers who also oppose the trail. Some of their specific concerns include trespassing on private property, accidental fires, leaving trash behind, and impacts to wildlife. The Great Redwood Trail Agency's draft master plan proposes some solutions to these concerns, such as signage to protect native cultural sites, and it also includes significant measures to remediate environmental damage caused by the railroad, such as removing train tracks and rail cars submerged in the river, and improving fish habitat. Proponents of the Great Redwood Trail, or GRT, such as the environmental organization Friends of the Eel River, see it as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to clean up the mess left by an earlier era of industrial pollution. But at the community meeting in Fort Seward, benefits like environmental cleanup or increased public access to the river did little to convince a group of residents who seemed nearly unanimous in their opposition to the GRT. Alternative ideas offered at the meeting included mitigating environmental damage without building a trail, or simply building the trail in some areas, but not here in the Eel River Canyon, an area that has emerged as the most difficult and contentious segment of the proposed trail. Here's Alicia Bales, program director for the nonprofit Redwood Forest Foundation.
So when I hear about the Great Redwood Trail and the motivation to restore this terribly treated, incredible river, I think, why put a trail in front of that that the Native people are universally opposed to? If the goal is restoration and we all feel that way, that healing the river is the goal of the trail, then Native people should be leading that conversation. And I don't think that coming to Native people and saying, we really want to hear you unless you say no. Like, you're only allowed to be part of the conversation if you already agree this should happen. Because as far as I understand, local Native people have been saying they were opposed to this trail since the very, very beginning. So I think that Dothan, no trail, has to be an option in the conversation, or we're not really having an equitable conversation about this.
I've been very moved by what I've heard here today, and it's not that I haven't heard it before, but sitting in this circle of people and hearing all the points of view, any action absolutely has to include the no action.
This is Steve Madrone, the 5th District Supervisor for Humboldt County, who also sits on the board of the GRTA and has the ability to shape the policy of the trail. He responded to concerns by saying that a no-trail option should remain on the table.
Otherwise, it's not an honest reflection of what we've heard here today. I think it's fair criticism to say that the way our master plan reads is very much, well, we're doing this, how would you like us to do it? And how can we involve you? That's not a fair reflection of what you've been telling us. Because it may very well be that this trail shouldn't be built. I mean, I don't know what the outcome's gonna be, but I can absolutely feel where you're all coming from when you say, we haven't been heard.
The public has until July 3rd to comment on the draft master plan, after which the GRTA will begin the process of conducting environmental impact reports for various trail segments. Reporting from Fort Seward for KMUD, I'm Sam Anderson.
Turning to Mendocino, KMUD's Matt Lefevre brings the latest headlines from Mendocino County, where a suspect was arrested in the brutal murder of an elderly woman. A man died while swimming off the coast, a DUI collision flooded a Ukiah street, and an incoming heat wave is forecast to reach triple digits.
This is Matt Lefevre with the headlines out of Mendocino County for July 1st, 2024. Let's begin with tragic news of a murder northwest of Willits this weekend. On Saturday, June 29th, at approximately 11 a.m., the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office received multiple calls from residents on the 5200 block of Blue Lake Road, located within Brook Trails. The callers reported a male subject causing a disturbance with sounds of yelling and possible fighting. Sheriff's Office deputies, not being immediately in the area, arrived approximately 20 minutes later. Upon arrival, at the request of a concerned caller, the deputies proceeded to a house on Blue Lake Road to check on a resident. The scene they encountered was alarming. The front windows of the house appeared to be broken, and there was apparently blood in the front and around the front of the property. Inside the living room, deputies discovered a 77-year-old female victim who appeared to have suffered severe injuries from a violent assault. They ensured there were no further victims or individuals present and began CPR and administered first aid while summoning emergency medical technicians. Tragically, the victim succumbed to her injuries and was pronounced dead at the scene. As deputies secured the scene, a vehicle arrived with Michael Coleman, the suspect, in the passenger seat. Based on evidence at the scene, deputies detained Coleman without incident. Mendocino County Sheriff's Office detectives were called in to take over the investigation. Coleman has been booked into the Mendocino County Jail on a charge of homicide and is being held without bail. Authorities are urging anyone with information related to the case to contact the Mendocino County Sheriff's Communication Center at 707-463-4086. Information can also be provided anonymously via the non-emergency tip line at 707-234-2100. And now news from the Mendocino Coast. On Sunday, June 30th, around 2:14 p.m., California State Park Rangers were dispatched to investigate the case of a missing person last seen near the Pacific Ocean at Van Dam State Park. This missing individual was identified as 70-year-old Robert William Frost. Rangers promptly contacted Frost's family, who confirmed that he was last seen on the beach near the ocean's edge. State Park Rangers immediately commenced a search in the vicinity, but Frost was not initially located. The Mendocino Volunteer Fire Department soon joined the efforts, deploying jet skis to search the ocean. At approximately 3:35, the man was found submerged near the outer reef, about 3,000 feet southwest of the beach. Frost was swiftly transported to Big River Beach, where a deputy sheriff coroner declared the time of death at 3:48. Frost family members and legal next of kin have been notified of his passing. The coroner's investigation did not reveal any signs of foul play. And now to Ukiah, where a serious multi-vehicle collision occurred last Friday afternoon. On June 28, 2024, at approximately 4:50 p.m., Ukiah Police Department officers were dispatched to the intersection of Orchard Avenue and East Perkins Street following reports of a multi-vehicle collision with injuries. Fire and medical personnel were promptly dispatched to the scene. Upon arrival, officers observed two vehicles involved in the collision. One vehicle had sheared off a fire hydrant, causing water to gush from the broken hydrant and resulting in minor flooding at the intersection. For safety, officers closed a portion of the intersection and called in Ukiah City water personnel to shut off the water supply. A preliminary investigation by the Ukiah police suggested that the driver at fault was under the influence of alcohol. Due to the gravity of the situation, the Ukiah police designated traffic officer was summoned to conduct a detailed investigation. Officers determined that 59-year-old Jason Hamby was driving a Toyota Tundra at a high rate of speed northbound on South Orchard Avenue. Hamby failed to stop at the red light and continued through the intersection, colliding with a Toyota Corolla that was turning right onto North Orchard Avenue from East Perkins. After the collision, the Tundra veered off the roadway, causing major damage to both vehicles. The driver of the Corolla was transported to Adventist Health Ukiah Valley for treatment of their injuries. Fortunately, Hamby and his female passenger were uninjured. Upon interviewing Hamby, officers suspected he was driving under the influence of alcohol. He was arrested for felony violation of 23153A of the California Vehicle Code, DUI causing injury. Hamby was transported to the hospital for evaluation before being booked at the Mendocino County Jail. Starting Tuesday, July 2nd, Mendocino County is forecasted to face life-threatening temperatures and an increased wildfire risk due to the first major heat wave of the season. The National Weather Service forecasts highs reaching up to 112 degrees with multiple heat advisories and excessive heat warnings in effect through Saturday. This extreme heat poses significant risks for heat-related illness, particularly for those working outdoors, the young, elderly, and pets. The heat wave coincides with 4th of July celebrations, amplifying concerns. Stay hydrated, avoid strenuous activities, and ensure pets have access to water and shade. And that's the latest from Mendocino County. I'm Matt LaFever in Hopland, reporting for KMUD News.
In national news, Biden and Trump hit the campaign trail following their first debate. KPFA's Eileen Alfandari shares this report.
Thank you, North Carolina!
Toward the end of his campaign speech at the North Carolina State Fairgrounds, President Biden tacitly acknowledged the public concerns over his age and capabilities, exacerbated by his dismal debate performance. Biden said, "To state the obvious, I'm not a young man."
Folks, I don't walk as easy as I used to. I don't speak as smoothly as I used to. I don't debate as well as I used to. But I know what I do know. I know how to tell the truth. I know right from wrong. And I know how to do this job. I know how to get things done. And I know, like millions of Americans know, when you get knocked down, you get back up.
Biden laid into the danger he said Donald Trump poses to the economy, reproductive rights, the climate, Medicare, Social Security, and democracy. Trump refused to say whether he would abide by the outcome of the election should he lose again. Biden told the North Carolina rally that the stakes are too high. Trump poses a genuine threat.
The choice in this election is simple. Donald Trump will destroy our democracy. I will defend it.
Biden's rally speech was a counterpoint to his debate performance, during which he fumbled and seemed to lose his train of thought, as when he was trying to make the case on his record on social issues.
Child care, elder care, making sure that we continue to strengthen our health care system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with the dealing with everything we have to do with. If we finally beat Medicare.
Trump was quick to pounce and double down on his key campaign issue, immigration.
Well, he's right. He did beat Medicare. He beat it to death, and he's destroying Medicare because all of these people are coming in. They're putting them on Medicare. They're putting them on Social Security. They're going to destroy Social Security. This man is going to single-handedly destroy Social Security. These millions and millions of people coming in.
CNN counted 30 false claims by Trump and 9 by Biden last night. But under the rules of the debate, the lies went unchallenged by the CNN moderators. One of Trump's bogus claims was that everyone wanted the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion nationwide.
51 years ago, you had Roe v. Wade, and everybody wanted to get it back to the states. Everybody, without exception. Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives. Everybody wanted it back. Religious leaders. And what I did is I put three great Supreme Court justices on the court, and they happened to vote in favor of killing Roe v. Wade and moving it back to the states. This is something that everybody wanted.
Polls have shown that about two-thirds of the U.S. population supports abortion rights and wants Congress to pass a law to codify the provisions of Roe v. Wade, something Biden said he supports. But Biden mangled his criticism of Trump on the all-important issue of reproductive rights.
The idea that states are able to do this is a little like saying we're going to turn civil rights back to the states, let each state have a different rule. Look, there's so many young women who have been, including a young woman who just was murdered, and he went to the funeral. The idea that she was murdered by an immigrant coming in, they talk about that. But here's the deal. There's a lot of young women who are being raped by their in-laws, by their spouses, brothers and sisters.
At his post-debate campaign rally in Virginia, Trump mocked Biden's debate conduct.
Did anybody last night watch a thing called a debate? Man, that was a big one. But as you saw on television last night, despite the fact that crooked Joe Biden spent the entire week at Camp David resting, working, studying. He studied very hard. He studied so hard that he didn't know what the hell he was doing.
Biden's performance last night sparked panic in the ranks of the Democratic Party and private discussions on whether he should be forced to withdraw and have someone else run as the Democratic presidential candidate. The New York Times editorial board weighed in, saying that the clearest process for Democrats to defeat Trump is to, quote, acknowledge that Mr. Biden can't continue his race and create a process to select someone more capable to stand in his place to defeat Mr. Trump in November. Norman Solomon is executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy and co-founder of RootsAction.org. He's a frequent critic of the New York Times, but in this case, there's alignment. Solomon told Democracy Now! That Joe Biden showed without any doubt last night that he is clearly impaired. Solomon said Biden is in no way up to the job of defeating Donald Trump.
Where we are right now is that unless very quickly we've got Joe Biden no longer at the top of this ticket or on the ticket of the Democratic Party, it is a gold-plated invitation to a victory, not only for Trump, but an entire extreme right-wing agenda.
Publicly, though, top Democratic Party officials were standing by Biden. Former President Barack Obama backed up his former vice president, tweeting that bad debate nights happen, alluding to his own experience in 2012. Obama added that the election is still a choice between someone who has fought for ordinary folks his entire life and someone who only cares about himself. House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries answered with a flat no when asked if Biden should step aside. New York Democratic Congressman Richie Torres said he had to take a few more antidepressants than usual after Biden's debate showing, but he added that a Donald Trump presidency would cause me far greater discomfort than a Joe Biden debate performance. I'm Eileen Alfandari for KPFA News.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters, Sam Anderson, Matt LaFever, and Eileen Alfandari. KMOD News is online. You can find us on KMOD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmon.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.